the Song Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 21, The Songs That Made the Song People Sing. In this podcast, we're introducing ourselves to the Song Zi, not just a piece of music, not just a poem. Together, they produced something magical. I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colourful history. Chinese literature has had a long history with many brilliant achievements. Each age has added its own twist. For the pre-Qin period, they loved essays. In the Han Dynasty, it was prose. For the Tang people, it was poetry. People of Yuan liked Yuan Chu, a type of opera. In the Ming and Qing dynasties, it was novels. For the Song Dynasty, it was a genre called Song Zi. Although prose and poetry were also big in this dynasty, but Zi is the one genre that later generations particularly relate the people of the Song Dynasty with. Let's get some definitions out of the way. Zi is a type of lyric poetry. It was most often used to express feelings of desire, often in an adopted persona, but the greatest exponents of the form used it to address a wide range of topics. It uses a set of meters derived from a basic set of 800 patterns. The rhythmic and tonal patterns of Zi are based on certain musical song tunes, but these pieces of music were recycled time and time again, along with the title. The new poems often had nothing to do with the original title and music. So, to tell them apart, they would have subtitles or commentaries explaining what they were actually all about. Sounds complicated, but it's not unlike the hymns in Western churches, which were often sung to a variety of different tunes. Hymns had to follow a particular structure, and so fitted into different off-the-peg tunes quite well. What made these Song Zis stand out? Well, for one thing, they were often written in a colloquial style, you could say even conversational, which made them easier to remember. It also meant they were popular not just among the literati, but among the ordinary people too. Why were they sung and not read out? What was the point? To answer that one, I want to tell you a story. Do you remember Su Shi? We met him earlier. He was a Song poet and worked at the Imperial Academy, where there was an official who liked to sing. One day, Su Shi asked the official a loaded question. "How do you like my zi compared with those of Liu Yong's?" Liu Yong was one of the most famous zi writers in the Song Dynasty. The official replied, "Liu Yong's zi are just like the kind that can be sung by a 17-year-old young girl with a Hongya ban in her hands, and lyrics such as banks with poplars and willows, wind in the morning accompanied by a waning moon." A Hongya ban is a kind of musical instrument. "Your zi," Academician Su, the official said, "need a strong man to play the brass pipa," another musical instrument, "or have an iron plate in his hands, singing words like, 'The mighty river rushes eastward.'" Upon hearing his remarks, Su Shi doubled up with laughter. Now, we've had words about Song humor before, in so much as it doesn't always make sense to us today. So, let's unpack this just a little. What we learn from this reported conversation is that songzi were intended to be sung. Secondly, they sounded best when played delicately by a young girl and have graceful and restrained lyrics. They should not be sung by a big man with a brass pipa or banging on an iron plate. The important thing in the development of songzi is that the music came first and the words later. That's largely because the genre drew on a huge wealth of music, which it inherited from previous generations, especially from the Tang Dynasty. In the Tang Dynasty, there were basically three types of music. The first was the native and traditional music in the central plains of China. It was elegant and intended for the court. The second was the music of neighboring ethnic nationalities. The third category, and most important to our story, was the emerging folk songs that people sang in the side streets and alleys of Tang cities. The folk songs and the ethnic music were gradually merged. For some folk songs, the lyrics were written to match certain tunes and a given rhythm. Such lyrics were called zi, which became the origin of songzi. That's why we say, with songzi, the music comes first and the lyrics second. And also that songzi were based on urban and folk songs and were usually about daily life. Again, you may ask, how do we know all this? Come with me, just a moment. I want to show you something. This is the Sutra Library Cave at Mount Mingxia of Dunhuang. At the beginning of the 20th century, archaeologists found amazing cultural relics, but also, crucially, they found hundreds of folkzi, which dated from the Tang Dynasty and even earlier periods. They provided a vital clue to the form and development of the zi genre. Songzi were often songs of love, happy and sad, always in simple language, sometimes oblique, so you have to think carefully about their true meaning. For example, there's one called Looking Toward the South of the Yangtze River, which goes, "Don't climb me, it is too crazy to climb me. I am a willow by the Chu River. I am either cut or climbed by people, which are all a moment of love." So the meaning wasn't always obvious from the first hearing. Songzi were both a popular entertainment, but then also the literati would take it to new heights. Ordinary people would use crude, straightforward, and bold language. On the other hand, scholars zi were more refined, intricate, and subtle. Another important difference was the ordinary zi sang of true feelings. The literati thought that was a bit pointless, and instead wrote about more universal themes. The names of the tunes are worth spending a few moments recalling. Many came from the earlier Tang Dynasty. They had names like Bells Ringing in the Rain, which commemorated an imperial concubine who was forced to hang herself after a rebellion. The emperor missed her so much that he composed the tune to express his guilt. Another example is The Charms of Nian Nu. So the story goes, it was inspired by a talented singer called Nian Nu, who was seductively beautiful, with an alluring look in her eyes. When she began to sing, the sound could pass through the rosy clouds of dawn, and no sound was able to block out her voice, no matter how loud. The emperor would call upon her services whenever his banquets became too rowdy, and the guests needed to be beguiled. Songzi writers often became superstars. Liu Yong, who we mentioned earlier, was one of them. Liu Yong was a middle-aged, lowly official, but his zi were beautiful and popular. On his last day of work, all the singers, who were effectively high-class concubines, came to say goodbye. He wrote about this moving moment, naturally as a tsu. The shade of trees extends 1,000 miles outside the town. The red dresses of singers in 10 groups are covered in it. Conversations of parting seem to be longer than usual, while the carriage and horses urge me to leave soon. I wept secretly. How can I stay with you when I have to leave for my work? The elements of the Song Tzu, in keeping with all things related to the Song dynasty, were interrelated. Not just the music and the words, but also the process of spreading them around and performing them. No one part could exist on its own without the other elements. Local governments at all levels in the Song dynasty had full-time official singers. Restaurants had private commercial singers, and some literati also even had their own singers in their homes. Is it possible to find a modern-day equivalent to all this? Not exactly. Hollywood musicals, maybe. Certainly the best tsu writers were akin to film stars. Their tsu were sung in palaces, restaurants, during private parties, and in the streets and alleys of the Song dynasty. They had to be sung, or they wouldn't make sense. Maybe also because doing so would tap into a massive cultural library of connotations. There's a saying that goes, the tsu should be sung rather than read, and its beautiful sound cannot be enjoyed without red lips and white teeth. Special thanks go out to San Lien Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.